H. E. Safety's Common Sense Preparedness, an American Readiness Program. I'd like to take this opportunity to welcome you to the show and let you know what you're in for. Common Sense Preparedness was designed to give the American public the much-needed information on how to manage and respond to any type of disaster we might face, natural, man-made, or personal. We will not tell you who to vote for or talk about conspiracy theories or when the world is going to end, but we'll get you ready in case that does happen. During this show, you'll be exposed to current emergency information from government and non-government sources, a few musical artists, and we will talk about the true important information that everyone needs to know. First aid, CPR, what is a tornado, what to do during an earthquake, how to prepare a family emergency plan, a family emergency communication plan, how to hunt, fish, how to build a fire, what to do in case of power outages. The show will be hosted by myself, Tim Howard, and a variety of guests who will come and share their expertise with us. Nowadays, everywhere you look, someone is an expert. Just because someone writes a book or runs a blog does not make them an expert. However, my credentials? Well, they're pretty extensive with over 25 years field experience as a chemical biological warfare instructor, firefighter, correctional safety manager, area safety manager, safety inspector. I have been associated with various federal, state, and local governments. Currently, I'm associated with the FEMA think tank, OSHA field councils, and HE safety consultants. I have received numerous awards and citations throughout my career with the United States Air Force, U.S. Department of Justice, founding member of the United States Department of Homeland Security, and the U.S. Department of Labor. What does this mean? Well, it means you'll get reliable, verifiable information, not paranoia theories. I will share the experiences I have seen in the field since 1986, and I will be able to explain some of the why things are happening. Before we go any further, any information that you hear on the show or find on csp.hesafety.org is to be taken as informational only. We are not legal or medical advisors. We are here to give you alternate information to get you to think about things and use your own common sense to make your decisions. We do suggest that you talk to your personal medical and legal advisors to help you make a well-rounded, informative decision. Our website, csp.hesafety.org, has been designed to give you more information than can be found on this program. The website is free, so stop on by and begin your research with Common Sense Preparedness. You can download or review any of the past shows from our website and comment on any of the news articles that you may see. Also, please show some love to our sponsors. It is because of them we are able to reach you and offer you this life-saving information. Our sponsors have been selected based on the quality of service they offer to our listening audience. They are the vendors that should be of most interest to you. Common Sense Preparedness' mission is not to sell you anything, but instead it is to save as many lives as we can. It is sad to hear about any life being lost when it was avoidable. Remember, a wise man prepares for the darkness while a fool plays. Don't get caught playing. Listen to Common Sense Preparedness at csp.hesafety.org.
Welcome to Common Sense Preparedness. With your host, my grandpa, and
let's take a few minutes. I want to talk about the plague, the Black Plague. If you've been watching our website at cspdb.com, you'll notice the plague has been cropping up in the United States, in New Mexico, California, Oregon, Idaho. It's coming all over the place. Now, what's happening is because of the warmer time of the year, fleas are becoming more popular on rodents and animals. And when they become more popular, we have a chance of catching the bubonic plague. Bubonic plague is a hazard, a very high biohazard, a 4.4 on the hazardous scale for CDC. It's viruses and bacteria that causes severe to fatal diseases in humans, and for which vaccines and other treatable treatments are not available. Some of these diseases are bovine in Argentina, hemorrhagic fever, H5N1 or the bird flu, dengue, Lassa, hantavirus, Ebola virus, and the Black Plague. there is some things you can do to avoid this, especially this time of year, is it's a bacteria that's on a bacterial disease of rodents. It generally transmits to humans through the bites of infected fleas, but it can also be transmitted by direct contact with the infected animal, including rodents, rabbits, and pets. Usually it's the feces. If you inhale the feces, you can catch it. If they bite you, you can catch it. So there's a lot of ways transmission can happen here. Now, some symptoms of the plague in humans include sudden onset of fever, chills, headaches, and weakness. In most cases, there's a painful swelling of the lymph nodes in the groin or armpit or the necks. Plague symptoms in cats and dogs are fever, lethargic, loss of appetite. So if your animal starts to see this, and there might be some swelling of the lymph nodes under the jaw. When you see this in your animals, you need to get them to the vet to find out if they have the plague or not. If you see it in yourself or other humans in the area, you need to be watchful because this can be transmitted. Check our website at cspdb.com for more information on how to prevent the plague and what to look for. Also, recently, we had a Homeland Security alert go out on a terrorist attack. What happened was, this was in Sweden, and the terrorists attempted to blow up a nuclear power plant with a suitcase bomb. The bomb was not powerful enough to have done any real damage to the nuclear power plant, so there was really no danger there. However, it is an idea that the terrorist organizations have been looking at, and they're now trying to implement. They're trying to figure out how to do this. So the first couple attempts are going to be failed, but the idea here I want to bring out is we need to be prepared for a nuclear event to happen. If one of our nuclear reactors go down, go into meltdown, we had an incident in Pennsylvania where there was a water leak. Not dangerous, but still, our reactors are becoming aged, and they're going to have some problems in the next couple of years. Then with a terrorist threat, well, we got to prepare ourselves and our families for any kind of an incident that may include nuclear fallout. It's not always a nuclear war or an EMP or whatever you might have. It could be just a simple radiation level leak from a nuclear reactor because it was old. Or a terrorist got the plan right and destroyed one of our nuclear power plants. What would we do then? Would we evacuate, shelter in place? If we're going to shelter in place, do you know how to clean a person who has radioactivity on them? Alpha and beta particles. Gamma particles, they go right through you, so you can't protect yourself against that. But alpha and beta, you can, just like lead. If it's on your clothing, you have to decontaminate outside. That means showering, brushing off, and stuff like that. Go to cspdb.com for more information on this, on these events, and we will keep a closer eye on trying to put together a program that you guys can follow at home on how to decontaminate from a radioactive, radiological incident. On May 2nd, 2012, a medical alert came out of India regarding a fatal case of what they are describing as TDR tuberculosis. The key note here is that we now have an infectious disease that began as a multi-drug resistant disease, MDR, and through mismanagement of the cure, it's developed into TDR, which is total drug resistant. We're causing our own problems here. This infectious disease has been fatal throughout our history, but now we're causing it to become more potent than it ever was. We need to take a look at procedures of preventing TB transmissions. It might just save your life. Stop the spread of germs. Use antibacterial sanitizers. Wash your hands as often as possible. Avoid touching your face or your ears or your eyes. This is a way influenza is spread, but it's also the same way as tuberculosis is spread. The N95 mask will be required if this TDR, TB becomes close to pandemic levels. So now is the time to ensure that you have enough supplies on hand to handle a pandemic. Plus, you're going to have to take a look at your pandemic isolation protocols for your family and ensure that you have enough equipment for it. duct tape, plastic sheeting, tarps, identified isolation rooms. Right now, we're not in danger, but this infectious disease is fast becoming an area of concern. So this is the best time to prepare for a situation. Don't rely on the government to do anything for you. Right now, the World Health Organization is not acknowledging total drug-resistant anything. They're saying it can't happen. But the people that are dying in India, they kind of know different. So be prepared for a outbreak of totally drug-resistant TB, influenza, whatever the case may be. But if it gets a TDR tag to it, it's going to be nasty. And it can come over to the United States. So prepare yourselves and your family. Teach your kids how to wear N95 masks. Learn how to fit test an N95 mask, and so on. Have isolation protocols ready for your family. Go buy the duct tape, plastic sheeting, tarps, and stuff like that. Now is the time to prepare, not when the outbreak happens. Follow us on csp.hesafety.org for more information on tuberculosis, TDRs, MDRs, and protocols for isolation. You are listening to Common Sense Preparedness, American Readiness Program, right here on BBS Radio. This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Health Operation Team, preparing one person, one community, one country at a time, providing awareness, education, training, resources, and medical support, healthcare and emergency preparedness planning, both domestic and international. Please go to their website at www.hoteam.org, hotteam.org, and see where they have been, where they are, and where they're going. Or give them a call at 678-431-8914. Once again, that is 678-431-8914. And let them know you heard it on Common Sense Preparedness. Also, follow them on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. That's hotteam.org, your source for helping individuals, families, businesses, and communities be safer and healthier. Common Sense Preparedness brought to you in part by PatriotMusic.com.
America is known the world over for its passion for freedom and individual rights. If you love your country as much as I do, and if you'd like to hear great music inspiring this passion, check out PatriotMusic.com. Download music from three great albums, including a new album just released, with a cover you won't forget. PatriotMusic.com.
Hi, this is Matt Fitzgibbons with PatriotMusic.com. You're listening to Common Sense Preparedness with Tim Howard.
This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Rocky Mountain Survival Gear, your complete source for all things camping and prepping. They recognize the need of many people in the United States struggling to put together survival packs, not knowing where to start or what they need. So Rocky Mountain Survival Gear will be offering customized bug-out bags, emergency kits, and 72-hour bags to fit your specific needs. All you need to do is click on the items you need, and they'll put it together for you. Remember, once a disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare, so prepare now for the future with Rocky Mountain Survival Gear. Contact them at www.RockyMountainSurvivalGear.com or give them a call at 720-244-9701. Once again, that's 720-244-9701. You are listening to Common Sense Preparedness, American Readiness Program, right here on BBS Radio. Hey, I want to take a few minutes to talk about the environmental alert that was issued by Common Sense Preparedness on May 1st in regards to the Japanese nuclear crisis. A senator from Oregon, Senator Wyden, on April 16th, he issued a press release regarding a nuclear power station in Japan that was devastated by the tsunami and the earthquake. He personally toured the facilities and issued a couple letters and a press release. You can go to csp.hesafety.org to see the press release and the letters. We have links up there. But here's the curious part. Senator Wyden reported the situation was worse than reported. This fact is not the first time the Japanese authorities, or TEPCO, has been accused of this since the devastating earthquake last year. The senator noted how fragile the power plant is in its current state. Any more seismic events could bring the plant into the position of releasing radioactive material into the environment. We are not over this threat yet. It is still lingering but not being talked about anymore. Because of this press release, and due to the fact that this accusation has been levied before, I'm urging all residents of the Western United States, be prepared for a radioactive event. Create plans for shelter-in-place situations or SIP situations, decontamination protocols, and home medical treatment plans for radiation sickness. Hey, we can no longer sit and wait for TEPCO or the Japanese government to properly secure the nuclear material that might cause a radioactive fallout that will be felt in the Western United States. We must begin to prepare for the event right now. Common Sense Preparedness will be doing a series of shows and reports on how to mitigate a radiological event over the next few months in order to help prepare us for the possibility of this tragic event coming to the Western U.S. shores. Now, one of the things that really got to me was, on April 26th, Common Sense Preparedness issued another environmental alert about the tsunami debris that was headed to the U.S. The debris from the massive Japanese earthquake and tsunami from last year is heading to Alaska, Hawaii, and the U.S. West Coast, and Canada, experts say. Debris is scattered over 4,000 miles in one direction and 1,000 miles in another. It's a large mass. The Japanese government has estimated that 70% of the debris sank. But, you know, CNN was reporting that nobody's certain how much of the remaining 1.5 million tons of debris is still floating in the Pacific Ocean. Buoys, a soccer ball, an unmanned fishing trolley, and other items that float on the surface of the water and can be pushed by the wind have already turned up. The problem here is that the oil and chemical drums and fuel cylinders could also wash ashore. Now, put that together with the radioactive material in that nuclear power plant that could be devastated by any kind of seismic event right now. And granted, most of that would probably sink to the ground, sink to the ocean floor bottom. But what radioactive release will there be? And it will be coming to the U.S. Now, as for the tsunami debris, NOAA says models show the outer edge of the debris is at the West Coast and Alaska, and most of the debris is north of Hawaii, moving east slowly. The front edge of it has gotten here, and a whole cloud should arrive by the end of another year. NOAA said it's unlikely radioactive material from the nuclear power plant would make landfall, but there's a possibility. The U.S. Coast Guard said the Coast Guard would focus on pollution threats and potential impediments to navigation. But what about a radioactive fallout? I don't think they can handle that. It's difficult to predict just where the debris will come ashore. Due to the wind and current, we can only forecast a few days in advance, but it should be an upswing of debris on the shorelines in the next few months. On March 11, 2011, earthquake and tsunami in Japan crippled the nuclear power plant, destroyed homes, and killed thousands of people. It's not over with yet, folks. Until they can secure that material to where it will be safe in any kind of seismic event, we still have a possibility of radioactive fallout reaching the U.S. We must be prepared. We must be prepared for a radiological incident. We're only going to have a few days' notice, if any. So we must take it on ourselves and prepare for ourselves and our families in case this should happen. And like I said, HE Safety, Common Sense Preparedness will be doing a series of educational series on items that we can find that will help us through any kind of incident. Now, since the 4th of July is coming up soon, I want to throw some ideas on food safety to you. We're going to be doing a lot of barbecuing, a lot of grilling outside, a lot of picnicking. You know, and it's still a danger we could poison ourselves. So I want to talk a little about thawing. Completely thaw meat and poultry before grilling so it cooks more evenly. Use the refrigerator for slow, safe thawing, or thaw sealed packages in cold water. For quicker thawing, you can microwave the frost if the food will be placed immediately on the grill. Marinating, oh, I love marinating. Marinate food in the refrigerator, not on the counter. that some of the marinade is to be used as a sauce on the cooked food. Reserve a portion of the marinade before putting raw meat into it, or raw poultry into it. However, if the marinade used on raw meat or poultry is to be reused, make sure you let it come to a boil first to destroy any harmful bacteria. When you have raw meat and raw poultry, bacteria grows on it real fast. So if it touches the cutting board or anything like that, you've got to sterilize, or else you will transfer that bacteria. Safe internal temperatures for cooking. Whole poultry, 165 degrees. Poultry breast, 165. Ground poultry, 165. Okay, all poultry, 165. Ground meats, 160. Beef, pork, lamb, and veal, steaks, roast, and chops, 145. And allow to rest for at least 3 minutes. Transporting. When you're carrying food to another location, keep it cool to minimize bacterial growth. Use an insulated cooler with significant ice or ice packs to keep the food at 40 degrees or below. Pack food right for the refrigerator into the cooler immediately before leaving home. Keep meat and poultry refrigerated until ready to use. Only take out the meat and poultry that will be immediately used or placed on the grill. Mind the cooler. Keep coolers out of direct sun by placing them in the shade or shelter. Avoid opening the lid too often, so you can't have your beer there. I drink too much of it, which lets out the cold air and warm air in. Pack beverages in one cooler and perishables in a separate cooler. Leaving things out. Always refrigerate perishable food within 2 hours. Refrigerate within 1 hour when the temperature is above 90 degrees. And now, keeping things clean. Bring plenty of clean utensils and platters. Don't use the same platter and utensils for raw and cooked meat. Also, one last thing. Wash your hands. I don't want to see you rub your nose and try and serve me a hamburger. That's disgusting. Bacteria transfers from our hands if we don't wash them. So wash your hands, and if you can't have water out there, get a towelette or a clean cloth or something like that. But wash your hands and wash your surfaces. If you have any more questions or want any more information on food safety, visit us at cspdb.com. Well, now here we are in the summertime, and all kinds of stuff are starting to outbreak. Wildfires, mosquitoes, hantavirus, all that kind of stuff. One thing we don't really talk about too much, and just because it's new, and that's the West Nile virus. The West Nile virus is a potentially serious illness. Experts believe it has established itself as a seasonal epidemic in North America that flares up in the summer and continues until the fall. This is because mosquitoes are around during that time. The West Nile virus is carried by mosquitoes. The West Nile virus has emerged in recent years in temperate regions of Europe and North America and is becoming a persistent threat to public and animal health. The most serious manifestation of the West Nile infection is the inflammation of the brain in humans and in horses, as well as a mortality in certain domestic and wild birds. West Nile virus has also been a significant cause of human illness in the United States in 2002 and 2003. When we really didn't know much about it. Now, West Nile virus has been around a long time. It was first isolated from an adult woman in the West Nile district of Uganda in 1937. We had outbreaks in Egypt in the 50s, Egypt and France in the 60s. West Nile virus first appeared in North America in 1999, reported in humans and horses. Encephalitis. Don't know how to say that one. It was the inflammation of the brain. Now, the West Nile virus has been described and located in Africa, Europe, Middle East, West and Central Asia, and most recently in North America. Since 1999 in the U.S., West Nile virus human, bird, veterinary, and mosquito activity have been reported from all states except Hawaii, Alaska, and Oregon. So how does it spread? Well, infected mosquitoes. Most often, West Nile virus is spread by the bite of an infected mosquito. Mosquitoes become infected when they feed on infected birds. Infected mosquitoes can then spread the West Nile virus to humans and other animals when they bite them. Transfusions. transplant and mother-to-child transmission. It's a very small number of cases, but the West Nile virus also has been spread through blood transfusions, organ transplants, breastfeeding, and even during pregnancy from mother to baby. West Nile virus has also been spread through casual contact, touching and kissing a person that is infected with the virus. So, basically, if you get infected, we're now going to go through isolation protocols. You have to be careful with this West Nile virus. It's very contagious. Now, what you can do to prevent it? Now, the easiest and best ways to avoid the West Nile virus is to prevent mosquito bites. How do we do that? Well, when you're in the outdoors, use insect repellent containing EPA-registered insect repellent. Follow the directions on the package on how to use it. Many mosquitoes are most active at dusk and dawn, so try and stay inside or wear long sleeves during those times. And make sure you have long pants on. Make sure you have good screens to your windows and doors and keep the mosquitoes out. Also, anytime it rains, get rid of the mosquito breeding sites by emptying standing water from flower pots, buckets, barrels. Change the water in pet dishes and replace the water in bird baths weekly. Drill holes in tire swings so that the water will drain out. Keep children's wading pools empty and on their sides and upside down when they're not being used so the water can't gather. How do you know if you got the West Nile virus? Well, here's some symptoms. Serious symptoms in a few people. About 1 in 150 people infected with West Nile virus will develop severe illness. The severe symptoms can include high fever, headache, neck stiffness, stupor, disorientation, coma, tremors, convulsions, muscle weakness, vision loss, numbness, and paralysis. These symptoms may last several weeks, and neurological effects may be permanent. Milder symptoms in some people, up to about 20% of people infected, will display symptoms that can be and can include fever, headaches, and body aches, nausea, vomiting, and sometimes swollen lymph glands, or a skin rash on the chest, stomach, and back. Symptoms can last for as short as a few days, though even healthy people have been sick for several weeks. Most people who have it show no symptoms at all. Approximately 80% of the people, about 4 out of 5, who are infected with the West Nile virus will not show any symptoms at all. But there will be no way to know in advance that the person has developed an illness or not. So how soon does people get sick? Well, 3 to 14 days after the infected bite. How is the West Nile virus treated? Milder West Nile virus illnesses improve on their own, and people do not necessarily need to seek medical attention for this infection, though they may choose to do so. If you develop symptoms of severe West Nile virus, such as unusual severe headaches or confusion, seek medical attention immediately. Severe West Nile viruses usually require hospitalization. Pregnant women and nursing mothers are encouraged to talk to their doctors if they develop symptoms that could be West Nile. So what is the risk of people getting sick from West Nile? People over 50 are at higher risk to get severe illnesses. People over the age of 50 are more likely to develop serious symptoms with West Nile. If they do get sick, and they should take special care to avoid mosquito bites. Being outside means you're at risk. The more you're outdoors, the more time you can be bitten by an infected mosquito. Pay close attention to avoiding mosquito bites if you spend a lot of time outside, either working or playing. Also, there's a risk through medical procedures, but that is very low. All donated blood is checked for West Nile virus before being used. The risk of getting West Nile through blood transfusion and organ transplant are very small, but they're still there. And it should not prevent people from surgery, because the risk is very small. Pregnancy and nursing women do not increase the risk of becoming infected with West Nile. So don't go outside and hang out with mosquitoes. The risk of West Nile virus may be present to the fetus or the infant infected through breast milk. Talk to your care provider if you have concerns about this. So what are we doing about this? Well, CDC is working with state and local health departments, the FDA, and other government agencies, as well as private industries, to prepare for and prevent new cases of West Nile virus. A lot of it has to do with education. We have to get the word out, so help spread the word and let them know what the symptoms are, how they get this, and what to do in case they do get this. Something else you should know about the West Nile virus. The mosquito gets it from the bird. If you find a dead bird, don't handle the body with your bare hands. Contact your local health department for instructions on reporting and disposing of the body. They're going to be able to tell you if we have West Nile in the area. Remember, it's reported in all states except Oregon, Alaska, and Hawaii. If you go to our website at cspdb.com, you will find more links to other agencies and more information on the West Nile virus. You are listening to Common Sense Spread, American Readiness Program, right here on CBS Radio. This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Health Operation Team, preparing one person, one community, one country at a time, providing awareness, education, training, resources, and medical support, health care, and emergency preparedness planning, both domestic and international. Please go to their website at www.hoteam.org, hotteam.org, and see where they have been, where they are, and where they're going. Or give them a call at 678-431-8914. Once again, that is 678-431-8914. And let them know you heard it on Common Sense Preparedness. Also, follow them on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. That's hotteam.org, your source for helping individuals, families, businesses, and communities be safer and healthier. This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Pure Hydration Water Purification Systems. Rocky Mountain Survival Gear is now the sole U.S. distributor of Pure Hydration Water Purification Systems, which uses no chemicals, has no wait time, and can be filled from any natural water source. The purifier eliminates pathogens, viruses, bacteria, chemicals, heavy metals, fecal matter, sediment, bad taste, and odors, and quickly turns potentially contaminated water into safe and clean drinking water. Pure Hydration offers their purifiers in 6 different personal carrier modules for every outdoor endeavor. For more information, contact Rocky Mountain Survival Gear at www.rockymountainsurvivalgear.com or give them a call at 720-244-9701. Once again, that number is 720-244-9701. I got a chance the other day to take a look at the 7-day, 2-person emergency kit from Health Operations Team. This kit is a great basic starter kit. While it does not contain all the emergency supplies that you'll need during a prolonged disaster, it has enough supplies to ensure that you will survive any 7-day disaster. That's why it's called a basic starter kit. The first thing I noticed was the versatility of the bag. It can be used as a backpack, carried by the handle, by the shoulder strap. It even has wheels on it, so if you need to roll it, you can. The food package and water supplies make the kit kind of heavy, but these are basic requirements, and there's no way of getting around this weight. That's one of the reasons physical conditioning is a requirement in any kind of preparedness plan. Now, everything in the kit is stored in plastic Ziploc bags for weatherproofing protection. First idea I got in my head was, it showed me that I can use it, this weatherproofing idea, for other items. I mean, even a radio came in a plastic bag. The kit comes with a standard first aid kit, hygiene products, rain ponchos, light sticks, rope, and even a pry bar, just to name a few items in the bag. So it has a lot of equipment in there that you do need, some basic equipment. You're going to want to modify it to your family's needs. If your family needs medication, you may want to put the family medication in there, extra eyeglasses and such. Health Operations Team has a complete listing of all the items contained in the kit on their website at hoteam.org. Now, the price on the kit is unbeatable, $130, while all other outlets charge a minimum of $199, $200 for similar kits. Health Operations Team is offering these kits at cost with zero profit margin. What a deal. But what I want to remind you is Health Operations is a non-profit organization. If you can show them any kind of love, please do so. Even if it's a dollar, they need the help. They need the money so they can go ahead and give these kits to people who are in need, who really need them. Now, some of the items in the kit that I would recommend to change, one would be the radio and the flashlight. Both of them are items that use batteries to operate with. I would exchange them for solar hand-cranked items. I mean, there's no reason to carry the extra weight of the batteries. There's nowhere to recharge them or anything like that. They're good for the home cache, but if you have to use it as a bug-out bag, I'd have solar equipment with me. Now, the coloring book and crayons, that's another thing I'd probably be changing. Now, if you have a kid that's less than 5, it's a great distraction for them. For the older kids, this is where we want to customize the bag for ourselves. We have older kids, we want to put some other stuff in there. However, it does have a deck of cards for adult distractions. Both the food packs and the water packs are edible, trust me. Now, granted, I'm a very picky eater. It's not my preferred food of choice, but in an emergency, well, I know I can eat them and get my calories that I need. They are edible. Overall, I was pleased with the starter kit. The price was great, and they'll get you through any type of emergency. So I'm recommending that if you need a kit, contact hoteam.org, and they will be able to get you one. Now, they have a special price program available for disadvantaged and the elderly. So when you talk to them, let them know what you're doing and who you are, and that you heard it on the radio show, and see if you qualify for a discounted program. But even if you don't qualify, it's still a bargain at $130. So contact Health Operations Team at www.hoteam.org. Or you can call their Georgia phone number at 678-431-8914. Once again, that number is 678-431-8914. Now here's the newest song from Matt Fitzgibbon to PatriotMusic.com.
In the spring of 1943, I was just 18 when my country said that she needed me. The funny thing is, on my birthday, just the week before, I went downtown in my only suit and joined to fight the war. Father, he fought in World War I to set Europe free. And Mr. Wilson said he'd fight and spread democracy. And he was on his way across the sea to fight for some stranger's liberty. And he didn't know if he'd be back again. He just hoped that they would remember the American man. Well, I went to Europe and was wounded in 45. My brother, he went to Tarawa, didn't come back alive. just hope that they would remember the Americans. So many souls have offered their lives for strangers in need. And no one can know its worth like the ones who've been free. My son was sent to Vietnam, and he made it home and had a daughter who's grown to look just like her mom. She graduates from the Naval Academy in the spring of next year. You'll never meet anyone smarter, but she's so sincere. She'll be on her way across the sea to fight for some stranger's liberty. And we won't know if she'll be back again. We just hope that you will remember the Americans.
Hey, I want to take this opportunity to talk about the Responder 84 ALS backpack from 511 Tactical. Now, when I first saw this backpack, it was during tornado recovery operations in Kentucky earlier this year. I was immediately impressed when I saw all the equipment the medic had in his backpack. He even had an O2 bottle, and it was secured well to the inside of the backpack. When the medic opened up this ALS 84 backpack, I noticed that he had every type of trauma equipment that he was going to need, including neck braces, an O2 kit, an AED, a smaller bag containing medicine and syringes, and another one containing bandages and clot stoppers. The medic even had a portable air splint system in his backpack. Now, they are large. There was also enough room to contain all this guy's paperwork that he needed. The medic explained to me that he had been using the backpack for a few months now, and he said it was the greatest thing since sliced bread in the border field medic. He told me it was easy to carry and has large enough compartments to hold the basic equipment he needed in the field to handle almost every type of emergency he would face. Now, my idea for the bag, when I saw it, was a little bit different than his. With that much room, I figured, not only would it be able to handle my family medical kit, which is extensive, but there'd be enough room for my bug-out equipment also, reducing my overall number of bags I'd need to carry. So when I got my Responder 84 ALS backpack from 511 Tactical, I immediately loaded it up with all the stuff I had and took it on a test run. I bugged out to one of my family's retreat points for 3 days. The bag was able to handle the heavy load I placed into it, including food rations, a water pack, solar blankets, an emergency radio, solar lantern, a pry bar, tarp, fire starter kit, military rain gear, military jacket, and my essential jerky and candy stash. I was even able to place my family emergency manual in the top layer compartment. To my surprise, after all this, I still had room. So in went the gun cleaning kit, the trauma kit, a shovel, a mess kit, a two-man tent, and my navigational pack. Then, on the outside, I attached my machete, a CPR kit, a small fishing tackle bag, and my trusty old sleeping bag. That is when I hit my first problem with the backpack. I still had room, and no more equipment. Good problem to have. So then I placed it on my back and automatically felt the weight distribution on my shoulders and my upper back. It was actually comfortable. When I got to the retreat area, I unloaded what I had needed in order to eat and set up camp. Now, after dinner, I laid down in my tent for a few minutes because, you know, I was not as young as I once was, and I started to listen to the music of nature. The next thing I knew, it was getting extremely cold outside, so I jumped into my sleeping bag and fell right asleep. I awoke in the morning to a snow-covered campsite. I was not prepared for that, not at all. I went to grab my field jacket and realized that my backpack was not with me in the tent. I had left it outside. Oh, boy. My three-day trek was now down to 12 hours. Now, if my jacket and my extra clothing in the backpack are wet, well, I just have to return home early. However, to my surprise, after brushing off the snow, all the contents in the bag was dry as a bone. And that included my printed family emergency plan. The ALS-84 backpack system from 511 Tactical saved the trip. I was able to get the fire starter kit out and make a hot cup of coffee. The versatility of the backpack and the amount of equipment it was able to handle made me an avid believer. It can be used as a professional medical response kit or a bug-out kit. The overall 3,941 cubic inches can handle most equipment, and the YKK zipper system on the bag is a great improvement over the old zipper system that would always get stuck and eventually break. Another item of this backpack that I found interesting was the see-through zipper mesh pockets on the inside of the bag. It is of great value when you're not sure where your items are stored. A quick glance, and you know where your equipment is without having to open up each pouch to find out where they're at. The removable kit system, blue and red bags, is useful for storing small items and keeping them separate from the rest of your gear. I was able to store a med kit in one, making it readily available if I needed it. I also found a Velcro inside the pack to be useful for attaching my Maglite holder and a few of the other belt pouches that had Velcro on them. This way I was able to have my pandemic kit secured without having to search for it. Overall, I found the Responder 84 ALS backpack to be a great addition for $249.99 because it is large enough to turn two bags into one. With each bag costing about $150 each, you end up about $50 ahead of the game. For more information on the Responder 84 ALS backpack, come visit csp.hesafety.org. You are listening to Common Sense Preparedness, American Readiness Program, right here on CBS Radio. This portion of Common Sense Preparedness is being sponsored by Health Operation Team, preparing one person, one community, one country at a time, providing awareness, education, training, resources, and medical support. Healthcare and emergency preparedness planning, both domestic and international. Please go to their website at www.hoteam.org, hotteam.org, and see where they have been, where they are, and where they're going. Or give them a call at 678-431-8914. Once again, that is 678-431-8914. And let them know you heard it on Common Sense Preparedness. Also, follow them on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. That's hotteam.org, your source for helping individuals, families, businesses, and communities be safer and healthier.
Emergencies happen every day. Are you prepared for a crisis? HE Safety can help. Together we'll prepare for natural and man-made disasters, medical emergencies, extreme weather, and other safety-related issues. It all happens on the Common Sense Preparedness Show, hosted by Tim Howard of HE Safety Consultants.
Common Sense Preparedness would like to announce our new Emergency Information Network is on our website. Here you'll find the latest news regarding food safety, emergency news, FEMA daily reports, medical alerts, solar weather alerts, and hurricane reports. Plus you'll find links to outbreak databases, near-Earth objects, solar flares, and information from government and non-government outlets. Come join us at csp.hesafety.org and take a look at our new Emergency Information Network. Remember, a wise man prepares for darkness while a fool plays. Don't get caught playing. Listen to Common Sense Preparedness and American Readiness Program at csp.hesafety.org. Or follow us on Google Plus and Facebook.
In the United States, West Nile virus has spread from coast to coast. It affects the old, the young, and everyone in between. It's still a risk for serious, life-changing, and even fatal disease. Your best defense against diseases carried by mosquitoes and other insects is simply being prepared. Keep an effective insect repellent close by, convenient, and ready for use. Keep it close and help fight the bite.
A message from CDC of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
You are listening to Common Sense Preparedness, American Readiness Program, right here on CBS Radio. You know, 4th of July is coming up this week, and I want to talk a little bit about fireworks safety. All fireworks safety starts with common sense. Using consumer fireworks on our nation's birthday, it's as American as apple pie, backyard barbecues, and parades on Main Street. And it is equally safe if a few common sense rules are followed. The National Council on Fireworks Safety offers these common sense safety tips for using consumer fireworks in the hopes that injuries to consumers can be greatly reduced this season. Parents and caretakers should always closely supervise teens if they are using fireworks. Parents should not allow young children to handle or use fireworks. Even the sparklers can burn. Always have water ready and if you're shooting fireworks off. Know your fireworks. Read the caution label before igniting it. I don't know how many times I lit something and all of a sudden it was bigger than I thought it was going to be. Obey all local laws. If fireworks are not legal where you live, do not use them. There's a reason it's not legal. If you have a high fire area, brush area, mountainous area, you can start a fire that you don't want to see. Alcohol and fireworks do not mix. Wear safety glasses whenever using fireworks. Never relight a dud firework. Wait 20 minutes and then soak it with a bucket of water. Soak spent fireworks with water before placing them in outdoor garbage cans. You don't want one of them going off mistakenly. Avoid using homemade fireworks or illegal explosives. They can kill you. I had a friend when I was a kid trying to make an illegal explosive for 4th of July. Blew both his hands off, and he was only 16. If you hear of any illegal explosives, please report them to the fire or police department because you don't want them coming to your area. Now, if you're using sparklers, always remain standing while using a sparkler. Never hold a child in your arms when using sparklers. Never hold or light more than one sparkler at a time, and never throw your sparklers. Sparkler wire and stick remains hot long after the flame goes out, so be sure to drop the spent sparklers in a bucket of water. Teach your children not to wave sparklers or run while holding a sparkler. That can be dangerous for them. If you have any more questions, visit us at CSPDB.com for more information on firework safety. All right, here's an interesting one. Something that we haven't really been given much attention to lately. But around June 28, 2012, Russian bombers violated Alaskan airspace. The Russian bombers were playing war games in the Russian territory, but strayed off course. Once the violation was identified, U.S. interceptors escorted the bombers out of U.S. airspace. Both sides showed very tight military professionalism, and there was no danger to the U.S. public. However, this does bring to mind that the U.S. is still at a state of war with terrorist organizations, and things can happen. While we're at war, and even when we're not at war, nuclear events and nuclear war is still a very real possibility. Now, since the 80s and 90s, we kind of got away from the nuclear war aspect, but it's still a very real possibility, as this incident goes to show. Let's say the U.S. is attacked by a nuclear country who launches nuclear missiles at us. I know, it's a scene from the 1980s, but even now, in the 21st century, it's still a threat. So what would happen to the civilian population? Our family emergency plans must include plans for nuclear, biological, and chemical warfare. As long as these weapons exist, we need to plan for accidents or discharges of them. These are still possible disasters that we might have to face. So what you want to take a look at and want to question yourself on, do you have a fallout shelter from nuclear radiation? Do you know how to decontaminate a person from alpha and beta radiation or beta particles? Do you even know what they are? Can you clean gamma radiation up? Now, honestly, alpha and beta particles are your secondary radiation. They are in a solid form. And they get on your clothing, you have to brush them off, and then you have to wash them off. So basically, when you come in, after a nuclear environment, you come in, you have to take a shower before you enter the house, before you can spread radiation. Now, gamma radiation is invisible. That goes through you very quickly, and there's not much you can do about it. These are still problems that we need to address in our family plans. So, this incident on June 28th goes to show you that, yeah, we still have enemies out there, and things can happen. I remember a story from back in the 80s or 70s where a miscommunication between the two superpowers led to almost nuclear war or nuclear launch, because one thing said something and the other one said this and that. I mean, it can still happen, so we have to be prepared for that. As long as these weapons exist, we need to prepare our family plan for that. Thank you for tuning in to HE Safety's Common Sense Preparedness and American Readiness Program. You may be found at the web at csp.hesafety.org. Remember, a wise man prepares for the darkness while a fool plays. Don't get caught playing. Tune in to HE Safety's Common Sense Preparedness.
Using both hands. Founders knew the Second Amendment was the final one to keep, to hold our other rights intact so we'd never become sheep. Stalin, Hitler, Mao, and Pol Pot, they told us things that you never forgot. Lessons to your daughters and sons, to fear the government, to fear the guns. Now the new world order crew, well, they're making their demands. Don't feel safe if you are wrong. You say gun control is using both hands. Using both hands.